gentlemen, boopers and illumineers. My name is Jared, and with me is the bouncy sunshine of my life, Anna.
Hello, I'm Anna. I'm the booper.
The booper. No, that's our youngest child. We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Today, we will be looking at two games. Boop, published by Smirk and Dagger, and Paris, La Cité de la Lumière, published by Devere. So let's settle in at the table, get comfy, and discuss.
All right, so first up, we have Boop. Boop was designed by Scott Brady, artwork created by Kurt Covert, and published by Smirk and Dagger Games. Boop is a two-player abstract grid movement strategy game where players are bouncing kittens on a quilted bed in hopes of guiding them into cathood. They can achieve victory by having three cats lined up in a row on the bed. The catch is that you and your opponent boop these kittens and cats all over the bed and even off the bed, foiling each other's plans for organized cat dominance. It's cute, and it's thinking, and it's great because there's cats.
There's cats.
Cats are wonderful.
Yeah, I guess so. It depends on what kind of cat.
I have only ever had wonderful cats, so yeah, I don't know anything else.
I feel like I've met several cats that are probably demonic.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, Jared.
Okay.
That one cat ate our philodendron and it's poisonous. That's why it was bouncing off of the walls and everything. That wasn't a demonic cat.
It was definitely demonic.
That was a poisoned cat because we didn't research our houseplants.
No. That cat chose to drug itself and then went crazy.
No, you're supposed to research your houseplants. I probably just cost you listeners because you just
admitted to poisoning
cats.
You admitted to poisoning cats.
I love cats.
I did no such thing.
I was heartbroken when I found out that it had eaten the philodendron and poisoned itself. It survived. It was fine. The cat was totally fine. It just was really, really weird for an evening until we hid the philodendron.
I don't love cats, but I would never poison one. I just need to caveat and clarify that on the airwaves of our podcast.
Now that we're politically correct and all.
Oof, hopefully you guys stuck around for cleaning that up. Anna, I don't know. Abstract games are so interesting because they take away some of the theme. Like there's cats and kittens bouncing on a bed, but really like it could be anything. So thinking about like the kind of question to ask here is a little bit interesting, I think. But for our opening question, something I thought about on the way home, would you rather have a cat that provides you with kittens? What, like once a year? Is that how it works?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know how often cats can pump out kittens.
No, that was the answer to my question. Yes, I would rather have that.
Or, but this cat that pumps out kittens all the time is not a nice cat. Or would you rather one cat and that's all you get for the rest of your life for pets?
That's a very mean question.
But it's the nicest, sweetest cat in the whole wide world. I'm still working on it because I like thought of this like as we were driving home tonight. I mean, would you rather aren't supposed to be nice. So that makes sense.
Okay. I would probably rather have the one nice cat.
100%.
Because kittens are wonderful and amazing, but you just can't keep them all. And then you have to give them away. And so kittens are this short-term pleasure.
Yeah.
But having a cat that is just awesome forever is a long-term pleasure. I'm going to invest in the long-term. That's just me.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I would not want kittens.
I was going to say, this isn't even a would you rather for you. No, you don't even care.
This was for you. Because I don't know. Maybe you have a question for me or maybe we can just move on. But like, it's a cat thing, and I kind of am pretty black and white about how I feel about pets in general, let alone cats. So, no offense to all you cat lovers out there. I'm glad that you all love them, so I don't have to.
All right. Well, thank you for making me sacrifice my kitten love. It's kind of mean.
But... I know, but you got the greatest cat ever, so it worked out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I appreciate you indulging in my would you rather question.
No problem.
So with that said, would you please tell us how to play this game?
Yes, Jared, I would love to give an overview of the game. So Boop is kind of a grid style pattern building game. You turn over your box lid, you put the beautiful blanket on top, and that is the top of your bed. Every player, it's a two-player game, so each player has 8 kittens and 8 cats, and at first you can only use the kittens, and you take turns each placing a kitten, and once you get 3 kittens in a row, then the kittens all jump into the box lid, because kittens really like box lids, and they all upgrade into cats, and then you get 3 cats into your supply that you can use instead of the 3 kittens that you got, that you upgraded and got 3 in a row of. And then once you get 3 cats in a row, you win the game. And rows can be horizontal, vertical, or diagonal. So it sounds pretty easy, except for the booping.
The precious booping.
The booping. So whenever you place a cat, it automatically boops each cat around it 1 space. So, and it'll boop it in the direct line of, if you line up the 2 cats, it'll boop that cat 1 space over diagonally, horizontally, vertically. So it's very difficult to get 3 in a row because your opponent can boop you, and you're also booping yourself. You can't just put 2 cats right next to each other or they're going to boop each other off. Now, kittens can boop other kittens, but they can't boop cats. So when you upgrade into cats, it gives you a little bit of an advantage there, and cats can boop everything. And
naturally,
of course,
you can be booped off the board.
The joy of, yes, you can. And the joy of being a cat that you get to boop everything. And things do not boop if they're stacked up. So if you get 2 in a row, it won't boop 2 in a row. It'll only boop 1 over. So that's the game. Keep playing. And it can take a long time. We've had games that took a very long time because we just kept booping each other off the bed, and then you'd reset and get those cats back into your supply and then keep trying again.
But I mean, okay, I guess we're kind of out of the how to play and we're kind of just jumping into it, but
I'm sorry.
But no, you're good. By a long time, 30 minutes max, I think, still.
Yes. Yes. Well, and it feels long for this type of game because all you're doing is placing cats and booping. There's not this.
Yeah.
And you got a kind of a second phase of the game because you get cats. And once you upgrade your kittens into cats, you're like, okay, we're getting a little bit closer. Right. But I mean, it's a pretty simple game. You're placing cats and you're booping. So yeah, 20 minutes felt long to me when we had a game that went that long.
Yeah. I felt the same way. There was a point in that one game that we played where we were just constantly booping each other off the bed that I was like, we're never going to get there.
And you would look, yeah, and it would be almost full. Because another way that you can upgrade a kitten into a cat is if you get all 8 of your kittens on the board at one time without them being booped off, and then you can upgrade 1 of them to a cat. And we got close.
We did.
And then it was just like, we'd have like 14 cats on the board, and then all of a sudden we'd have 2.
Yep, because it would just
totally
clear them out.
Empty again. So that was interesting because we played some games that went very quickly.
Yep.
And then some games that took a very long time. And
again, everything being relative. Because I really think this game kind of maxes out at 30 minutes because eventually you're going to find a combination where somebody's lining up 3 cats in a row.
Yeah.
So no, I think it's a very interesting little game. I've known about this game for a little bit and I've been curious to try it out. And I mean, I know that you love cats, so I'm always looking for a good cat game. And I don't know, like it is very abstract. Both of these games we're going to talk about today, you could literally rip off the theme, put anything else on it, and it would still be the exact same game.
Okay, but here's the thing.
All right.
I think that it's good that they didn't do that. Because yes, you could have made this tile laying game.
Oh, sure.
Or this like Mancala style game where, you know, you're getting each other's rocks or whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact that you make it be cats and when they get pushed off their board, they're getting pushed off the bed and you're laying down beautiful little wooden pieces that are cats and kittens, I think that adds something to the game. I think that makes the game more enjoyable than if you were just moving around rocks or tiles.
Yes. No, I do agree with
that.
The
artwork and the theme lends itself to the game, even though you're right, the game does not need that for the mechanisms itself.
Yeah, that's all I was really trying to say with that, is that there's not, like, this is weird to say, there's not cat mechanisms in the game. I mean, it is just, I just want people to understand, like, it's a simple tiling concept.
Yes.
And it is fun that you start with kittens and they quickly grow up to become cats for your cat dominance. There's this fun little, like, it's like not super thick, but squishy little quilt that you lay on top of the bottom of the box. And then the box looks like its own bedspread.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little touch.
And the quilt is a great artistic touch because quilts have quilt squares. And so those are your board squares, are the quilt squares.
And they're
so
kind of squishy.
It's cute. Yeah.
But it's not so squishy that the pieces don't stand up as well.
Everything functions very well. And they've even got the bottom of the box designed around the edge like a little bed skirt. And so you put the quilt on top, you get the bed skirt around, it really looks like a bed. So,
and the cats are cute. Like, they've got that really, like, almost anime style kind of look to them on the front of the box.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, they've got wooden pieces that are just, it's simplistically cute is what it is, which is very interesting for this game because this whole game kind of takes on this illusion of simplicity.
Yes.
And then there's a lot of tactile decisions that go into it.
Oh, yes. It becomes this chess, checkers, that Stratego, you know, like call out an old one, aspect to it, where suddenly you're thinking you're playing with cats, but really you're thinking through a lot of strategy. I mean, you can end up thinking several moves ahead, trying to line your cats up to where you can boop one to where it'll get in the row, and then you'll have three in a row. You've got to anticipate several moves ahead for your opponent not doing that. And I'd say in most of the games that we've played, I mean, we're good enough game players that you couldn't just really have one strategy going at a time. I feel like all the games that I won, I had to have almost like two separate areas where I was setting stuff up, because then if you foiled one, I still had the other one and that kind of thing. I mean, it's just a lot to think about. So you're right. The cats do make it deceptively cute and make it feel like it's going to be a very light game. I mean, you could even like imagine like a parallel between like Exploding Kittens or something in some of the artwork, but this is not an Exploding Kittens kind of game.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because there can be multiple points during the game where the board is more or less empty.
Yeah.
And so you're either restarting and you're kind of visualizing, okay, I want to go here because of six turns later, this is my goal. And so if you're not that kind of person that likes chess or whatever, and you don't like the thinking that many moves ahead, I don't know if this is going to be a game for you, because I will go ahead and admit, like, Anna won every game that we played. And
I wasn't going to say that.
No, it's fine. Everybody knows, Anna. Everybody
grew up playing
already
a lot of chess and checkers. I'm sorry.
No, it's not anything to be sorry about. Like, it's one of those things where you can see the board just so much easier than I can, because you're used to that kind of tactile movement. But I think it is, it's so interesting how that comes out, because I remember, and I know you don't remember this game when we were talking about it last night, but I remember an older game, not too old, but within the thought process of like modern board games, Onitama was one that was similar to this, where it was like you had five pieces a piece, that it was like this martial arts kind of thing where you're fighting the other side, and it still had that like chess mechanic, but because instead of in this one where you're just pushing pieces away, you had specific movements on cards that would dictate what you could choose to do. But once you chose to use that card's movement, then you had to pass that over to your opponent, and you didn't have that move anymore, and the cards would rotate. And that had a very different feel to it as far as negotiating the board versus this one. So even within this genre, there is a wide variety of ways that movement takes place. Whereas in this one, it's pushing you out either off the bed or potentially pushing you or your opponent into a more favorable situation without even like realizing it.
Yes. Yes. If you're not thinking ahead, you could be be helping your opponent when right. you think that you're helping yourself. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I think a lot of the games that you play, Jared, you pick a strategy and you run with it, or yep. you pick a strategy and you're kind of building and you're seeing your strategy develop over time. And this is not the kind of game that you can do that with, because like you're saying, you could get three in a row and then the board's clear and you're totally mm-hmm. starting over. And I saw you at several points in time be like, oh, Anna made this good play. She got the three in a row first. And so she got the cats, and you kind of were defeated, like, oh man, she's further ahead in the process than me or something like that. But you've got to realize with this type of this strategic maneuvering game, it's anybody's game at any point in time. The game, the board could get cleared, and then we're basically restarting. There's not this aspect of building your machine and building your strategy and building it the whole way through. I don't know. I just saw you get deflated sometimes and be like, oh, I've already lost. And I'm like, what is he talking about? He totally has not already lost. I can see like three moves he could do right now that would mess me up. I don't know.
I think I agree.
What are your
that?
Thoughts on that?
I think I agree with that to a point.
I know we're supposed to be critiquing the game and not you personally.
No, it's fine.
But
this, welcome to therapy with Jared.
Welcome to therapy with Jared.
I don't know. I think that that's, I think in some aspect you're correct, but there is this level of like, once you have your cats as opposed to your kittens, if you have a significant jump on having more cats than your opponent, you have a distinct advantage.
But
because you
there
have,
were points in time where you had more cats than me, and where you got the three
yeah,
in a row first and got the cats first.
I know, but you still got to know what you're doing. Like, I mean, I agree.
I just don't think that matters. I think it's anybody's game.
Know. It is interesting. But it does go back to, if you can see the board, and I know that's weird to say, but I think people know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
You will have an advantage over your opponent if they cannot see it.
Yes. And what you're talking about with seeing the board is you're talking about being able to visualize how moves will play out several moves ahead.
Yeah. It's not just the next move.
Right.
It's the next five or six.
Right. Yeah.
And if you can, like, I think you can see that. And I saw that play out multiple times during our plays. And you can play this a lot. Like, it doesn't take long. And you can just reset and go again.
Right. And there's a couple of different strategies you can use.
Sure.
I was like, okay, let me try this. In the very back of the rule book, it suggests two strategies. And the two strategies it suggests to start with are get your two cats in a row, because then you can put a third one on either side and it won't push, right? Because two cats don't push. It only pushes one at a time. And the other strategy is to get your cats in this L formation and yep. then have a cat boop the other cat into the middle, because it doesn't chain effect boop. If it boops in the middle, it's not going to then boop something else. It only the cat that you placed boops. So I think it's nice that the rule book gives you those two strategies to start with. But I thought it was really fun. I got excited every time the board was cleared. I was like, okay, that one didn't work, and I can actually see that he's trying this strategy, so I'm going to try this other strategy. And I remember one time where a lot of times I would try to kind of group my cats together to where I could then play from two separate sides and mm-hmm. still get something, so you couldn't block yeah. me on these two fronts. But I remember one game I played where I actually was on two separate corners of the board, so I was setting up two completely different strategies at the same time. I don't know. That one was really fun, and that was my favorite one.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just really happy for you, babe.
I like it. I like it. It's fun.
No, that's cool.
What was your favorite mechanic of the game?
I mean, honestly, I think the trickiness of it moving your pieces as well as your opponent's.
Mm,
you know, there's
yeah.
a lot of these that you don't really move your own pieces once they're already on the board. And there were times where I was like, oh, I've got to boop off like three of my pieces because
yeah.
I need them somewhere else and I need them to move. Like, cause once they're on the board, they're kind of stuck unless you move them.
Right.
And so sometimes you need those pieces back to move them elsewhere. And so I really like that aspect where it kind of changes that typical chess movement of once you've moved a piece, that's where it's going to go until you move it again kind of thing. Whereas this one can move multiple pieces at once and let you kind of reset if you need to.
Yes. Yes. I agree. That's a good component that, and unique really
uh-huh.
To that kind of style of game, that what you do affects your own pieces just as much as it affects your opponent's pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing when to like use your kittens versus your cats.
Yeah.
Because there's times where you want to get a kitten in there to be able to upgrade it
mm-hmm.
and you want to get your cats in there first. So
yeah,
I did like, I liked it. It was a fun little game, and it's, I like games that when you get down to that two player level where it's very simplistic like that, that I don't want it to overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
And so the fact that most games can be played in 15 to 20 minutes, I really like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say my, one of my favorite mechanics of the game is that you always only have 8 cats. So that was an interesting thing to manage, because I'm sitting here being like, I want certain strategies, but I only have 8 cats. And like you were saying before, if I put one over here to block you, then I don't have that cats or kittens. Cats, yep. You only have 8 cats / kittens. And so that was an interesting mechanic, because whenever your cats upgrade kittens upgrade into cats, they go into the box. So you lose them. So you still only have 8 for the entire game. You don't get more. Mm-hmm. So I thought managing kind of limited resources in that way was a pretty good mechanic of the game. Yeah.
I would say so. Is there anything about the game that you don't like?
No. I liked it. I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah. No, I mean, I feel like it is solid. And it's even got aspects like comparing it to other like tile laying type grid games. It's even got cool aspects that other ones don't. Like the idea that you do have the second phase to the game where you upgrade the kittens into the cats, and then the cats can do different things than the kittens can. And the goal is to get 3 of them in a row. I mean, I'm trying to think of another game that does that, that isn't just you're playing the same pieces the whole time, but the pieces actually kind of change out and evolve and have the second phase, and yet can still be played in 15-30 minutes, like less than 30 minutes. I think it does a really good job with what it does. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know that I really have anything that I would really complain about. I think
you just need to play with somebody that you can beat.
No, I don't know, guys. Like, I'm okay losing because I like playing with Anna.
I need you to play it a bunch more times so you can start seeing 6 moves ahead and realize this whole world that opens up to you. I mean, what I need you to do.
That does go back to like the thing that I like is that it does go so quick. And so you can play a lot of times and get better at it. I mean, anytime you were like, let's play Boop, I would be like, all right, I'm down. Let's do it. It's hard for me to critique. Mm-hmm. So with that, what would you grade this?
I mean, I'd grade it an A. It's an A. I mean, it's not A plus, because I do like games that have maybe a few more mechanics.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, again, thinking about comparing it to other similar games, it has more mechanics than those other similar games.
Okay.
And you can still play it in less than 30 minutes. Good.
I really enjoy it for the category that it's in.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite category, but I do enjoy it. And I do think that it's a solid game, and I'm very happy with that. It'll definitely stay in our collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one even the kids can play.
Yeah, it says 10 plus on the box. I think you need 10 plus to be able to start to see the board, but I think you could play it with younger kids and even use it to almost help kind of train them. Like, hey, if you do that thing, and the board is smaller than say a chess or a checkers board. It's got fewer grid pieces, so really it might be a good starter for training kids to see more in other types of grid games as well.
I agree with that, for sure. All right, so our other game this episode is Paris, La Cité de la Lumière, designed by José Antonio Abascal Akibo. I'm very sorry. Artwork created by Oriol Hernandez and published by Devere. Paris, La Cité de la Lumière is a two-player abstract strategy game where players step back in time to Paris, France in 1889, at the time of the streetlight. Players compete to establish cobblestone streets, build buildings, and make sure they are illuminated by the glorious streetlights. So we ask that you continue to sit with us at the table as we shed our own light on this game.
Prepare to be illuminated.
Oh.
Oh. But first, I would like you all to hear Jared's illuminating answer to my own would you rather question.
Oh.
Jared.
Yeah.
Would you rather live in a town or a city with streetlights that are always on or never have any streetlights at night.
Ooh.
So it kind of relates back to a conversation we also had in the car on the way home about light pollution.
I was going to say, this is very meta for only you and I.
Being able to see the stars. So always light at night?
No.
Or no light at night?
No,
that's
can't.
The question.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can do that. Like, are we including like no car lights?
No, street lights.
Just street lights.
Street, yeah, specifically the lamps.
And they're
like,
cutting
thinking
off.
About,
at like what, 8 or 9?
Yes. Lights out at 8.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
You'd rather that?
I'd rather do that. Yeah. Okay. I think you'd still get some natural lighting from the moon and the stars, and you'd have a better chance of seeing them.
It's true.
So I feel like that's way better than, I mean, now probably car accidents are going to go way up.
Muggings.
Oof. I didn't think about that. Well, it'll be like the purge every night at 8 o'clock.
Oh,
you just gotta get indoors and lock up,
and then look out your window at the stars that we can see because there's no light pollution.
Everybody's gonna have like a hatch to their rooftop, so they can go up there.
Oh, you're gonna rebuild the architecture for the whole city too?
Yeah, no, I mean that's what I would do for my house, but you can do what you want, I guess.
All right. Sorry that went so dark and dismal.
That really did go dark really fast.
Jared starts talking about the purge.
What about you? What would you do?
I don't have to answer the question. It was your would you rather?
Would you rather?
Would you
yeah, we're crushing it tonight. Grace, dear listeners, Grace. All right. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I feel like if the lights are on all the time, then we're just gonna, maybe I'm overthinking it. Let's just move on.
I mean, I would choose the same thing that you chose.
Yeah.
I would.
And we'd all have to be afraid of muggings for the rest of our life.
No. Okay. So I think that this would work in a smaller city or a town that had a lower crime rate. I don't think you want to just like start.
No,
this
I think we should start in New York City. That's where we should start. 8 o'clock, shut it off.
I was going to say Detroit. One of those big cities. Don't just start it there.
Let's do it Tokyo. Let's just cut it off. 8 o'clock. 12 hours, guys.
All the lights out. 8 o'clock. So I think you'd have to be careful where you implemented it.
Yeah, you can't do this in a city.
I would ultimately choose to live in a lower crime, potentially smaller city. That had no.
So it only affects your city. It's
had
not like
no street lights at night, because I think being able to step out of my own house and see the stars would be worth it.
Fair enough.
Even if I couldn't travel quite as easily at night.
Okay. All right.
And in this game,
yep,
we get to build cities and choose whether or not they're going to be illuminated, or build buildings in the city, whether or not they're going to be illuminated. So Jared, why don't you tell us a little bit how to play this game?
I mean, this game has chosen illumination. It wants to be illuminated with streetlights.
You definitely get more points that way.
That's how you win games. Yeah. By getting the most points usually. So this game is a 2-player game. It is abstract and it is something where a lot of the pieces are already kind of predetermined. So like, we each have a set of 8 tiles. We each have a set of pieces to identify our buildings. And we have action tokens that we can apply to certain special abilities that happen in the second phase of the game. There are 2 phases. The first phase is building the cobblestones, which kind of essentially what you're doing is you're establishing the different territories where you can build. And you're also collecting buildings to potentially build later on. And then the second half of the game, you're laying buildings down in the areas that you're allowed to, and you're also potentially taking actions to do various things, whether it's manipulating the board, scoring additional points, things like that. And so the way to work is when you're laying down these tiles in the first half, the tiles will either have a combination of orange, purple, and blue, in which the player colors are orange and blue, purple.
And they'll also have
street
lights.
Is the mixture color. And then, yes, they also, some of them will have street lamps on them. And so the way that you score points is you can only lay buildings on your color and the purple. But either person could lay on the purple, so you got to kind of get there first. And so when you're laying these down, you're kind of visualizing ahead of time, okay, I might want to have this look like this space so that I might want to have this look like this space so that I can lay this building here, because they all have the Tetris style structure to their pieces. So they all have different shapes and whatnot for the buildings. And so you're going to keep going. On your turn, you either place down one of your tiles or you collect a building piece. And play like this goes back and forth in the first phase until all 16 spaces have been filled. Once that's done, then you move into phase two. In phase two, you have these buildings in front of you and you are trying to cover up exactly what you need for that building. And again, you can only use either your color or a combination of your color and purple. The way that you score is however many street lamps are touching your buildings based all, it's multiplied by the size of the building. So if I have a building that has six little squares worth of size and it's touching three street lamps, that's gonna be worth 18 points at the end of the game. The other way that you score points is by having a clump of buildings together. And then you also lose points by not building your buildings that you have in front of you. If you can't fit it in or whatever it may be, maybe Anna stole the spot from you that you really needed. And then there's also these various, what they call postcards, that have actions on them. And each, there's eight of them out per game, and each player has four action tokens. So you're gonna be able to take four actions. You can either do an action or place a building. So though a lot of this game is you're kind of picking up on, depends on timing and deciding when to do what. And so they might be something like breaking the rules to where you can lay down this extra purple piece, or it might be adding an extra street lamp, or it might be making your building size bigger, or it might be laying down this painter who's painting street lamps and he wants to be able to see as many street lamps as possible. Things like that. So anyway, so you finish up until all players have passed at the end of phase two, you score points, and that determines the winner. So Anna, this is a very interesting game.
Yes.
It kind of has elements of patchwork, but it's also different because you're kind of having this two-phase thing going on where you're building out the board first and deciding which buildings you're going to try and implement. And it's also interesting because there's, I think there's a bit of a luck element in the first phase of when you pull which tile, because you have eight tiles and they all have different amounts of your color and the opponent's color and street lamps. And so since you're going back and forth with your opponent laying down these pieces, when you get certain tiles can either really hurt you or really benefit you.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because actually when we got this game, we were saying, oh, it's kind of like patchwork. And we have reviewed patchwork on the show before, so you can go back and listen to that if you want. But I feel like it's different because in patchwork, you're playing on your own board and you're Tetris style trying to fit pieces together.
Yeah.
And in this game, you're playing on a shared board. In fact, you built the board
together
in the first phase. And so the board's always going to be different. Yeah, and it was a shared build. And so there's going to have parts that you like about it and that you're planning on using, parts that you're frustrated that your move got blocked. And you're not really trying to fit the Tetris style pieces together. You're trying to fit them within the grid of the board. So there's a little bit of a difference with that, mm-hmm. I'd say. The two-tier aspect of it is very interesting. I would say it took me a little while to get used to that part of the game. Because even in the first phase, you're building the grid, but you're also taking whatever buildings you're going to play in the second phase. So you can't even just focus on building the ideal grid. You've got to focus on when is the right time to not play a tile and to take a building. Because by not playing a tile, you're not maybe setting yourself up the best way. But if you don't take whatever building you think you want to use, the opponent could take that building and you're both looking at the board. So everybody can see I've got this nice U-shaped thing I'm trying to play on, yep. You know, which also makes it very interesting in the second phase for being able to block each other because you're playing on the same board. And I mean, it's not a huge board.
No,
you can kind of see exactly what people are wanting to do. And there's this dynamic of you got to get to your spot first, but you also have the option to block your opponent. What are you going to choose?
And I don't know. There's a part of me that really wants to love this game because it has so many timing aspects that I really enjoy of deciding when to take that ideal building.
Yeah.
And when to place that ideal piece. And you only see one token at a time, so you don't know what's coming next.
Yep.
And you got to decide, do I want to go ahead and commit this piece, or do I want to make sure I have the building that I want? But if I don't get to build the building, then it's minus point, it's negative points. So then it's like, yeah, it's just a good give and take. And then each action can only be taken once by one player.
Right.
So when do I take my action versus placing my tile pieces? Because if we both want to go for this one spot that is shared because of purple tokens, then do I risk Anna taking it? Or do I go ahead and place my building and risk the action being taken?
Yeah, that's right. I'd say that the game has a lot more precise timing. And you said luck earlier. I feel like people might interpret it either way. I think that some people might interpret it as luck, like, oh man, I was trying for this and then he got there first. I guess he's mm-hmm. just luckier than. But some people really might interpret it entirely as strategy. Like, what's yeah. the likelihood of the tile I'm going to draw next versus getting this building now? What's the likelihood that my opponent's going to go here versus I could take this action first and then go there? So, yeah, I think it's open to interpretation how much is luck-based versus how much is the strategy of timing your movements and anticipating what the opponent's going to do.
Sure. No, I think the only really luck aspects, and I guess if you played this game a lot, then you could really get to know what those 8 tiles are going to be that you have. And so you can kind of decide, this is my throwaway tile. I'm just going to throw it in the corner that we're not building on right now and not worry about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's another 20-minute game that I don't know that I'm going to get it to the table all the time. So I'm not going to have those tiles memorized. And so it is at least going to feel like there's a chance when I shuffle those 8 tiles and only drawing one at a time, that I'm not getting what I need as I'm drawing them. And I'm like, crap, it's another one of those that either doesn't have a street lamp or it's got the 2 orange or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like, how do I make this work?
Yeah.
So, and especially for newer players, that's going to feel like that. Because until you get into the nuance, which I think there is nuance, and I think there is, if you...
There's a lot of strategy in it.
There is a lot of strategy in it. And if it's something that like you and one other person are playing a lot, then I think you can really get into the depth of what this game has to offer. But I do think there's, and it's weird because it's so simple, but I do think there's a little bit of commitment to get there.
I agree. So I would say, because, you know, part of this podcast is supposed to say, you know, is this the type of game that would work for you
sure.
and your table, right? So I would say that I think a pro, but also a con of mm-hmm. the game is that it does have so much complexity and so much that you're keeping in mind. Because, I mean, that's really a fascinating design for a 20-minute game, that it has 2 whole phases. And in the phases, you're not even doing the same thing the whole time. The first phase has this timing between when to place the tile, when to take the building. And the second phase has this timing of when to take the actions versus when to place the buildings. And so... Yeah, so it's very complex, put into a 20-minute game, which is a great thing, which is a pro, but also can make it feel overwhelming and inaccessible to brand new players. Because it can look, again, it's got that deceptively simple look. You know, you're building the grid and then you're fitting these Tetris pieces in here. And then you can very easily feel backed into a corner. There is a lot of player interaction, a lot of ways that you can screw you to the other person and block yeah. their ways, even if you're not intending to. And a lot of ways that you can just watch your strategy crumble all around you. I Jared mentioned the last game that I've won every single one. I don't think I've won this one. I don't know, because I got it for you for our anniversary a number of years back. So we've yep. played it a lot of times. And I was trying to remember back, like, have I ever won this game? Jared mostly wins this game. And so I have this experience often of having this fun strategy and this way I want to lay the buildings and then just watching it crumble around me because the player interaction and the ability to screw the other player is pretty high in this game. So those are some considerations as you're bringing it to the table, the complexity, the amount that you have to keep in mind. Yeah. I wouldn't expect anybody to feel like they're getting it on the first go of the game. I would prep people, if you're planning to play this game with them, let's play a practice round, get used to all of the mechanics, and then play a round where, you know, it actually counts, or where we all know what we're doing or something like that. Because it's only 20 minutes, you could do that.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think if it is two players that are more or less at the same skill level or experience within the game, you can play this game casually.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't require this deep thinking. Like, you can just draw a tile, decide, I like this tile, I'm going to go ahead and play it, or decide, I really want to go ahead and get that building because I'm seeing where I might put it on the board. Like, it doesn't have to be this, like, super in-depth, like, 3D chess kind of thing. It can just be a casual experience. But I do think there is an additional layer there that if you wanted to get really good at it,
yeah,
then you could. But it would require, I think it does require both players to be on the same page about that. Because if one person comes in with a casual experience, the other one's coming in with a very like competitive focus on all the optimal moves, it's going to be a very weird game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So if you're playing more of the casual, I think the artwork is really going to draw you in though.
Absolutely.
That's what drew me in when I first got the game for you, however many years back, is because it's Paris. You're creating the city of lights. And yes, as a fun theme.
Very artsy.
Very artsy. Pretty. Even the actions, like Jared said, are designed as these little postcards with these cutesy symbols. And they look like postcards you'd send from your vacation in Paris.
Yep.
And yeah, it's really cute. And
all the postcards
presents
get used,
well on the table.
And all the postcards get used. And when you use them, you flip them over to see the art on the back side.
Yeah.
So on a postcard, the side that you would write on is what shows the ability.
Mm-hmm.
Then you flip it over and see the art. And the buildings are good. Like, they're nice, high quality. And so I feel like they really nailed it with this one, of the right combination of price point with quality components and great art. From that perspective, like, I think the production value is really well done.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's a fun theme, building the city. I think that was the initial draw.
Oh, 100%.
I was thinking, okay, two-player game. We enjoy two-player games. And man, what a fun theme to engage in.
Yeah. And it is so quick. Like, I mean, once you really know what you're doing, it does clip really well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about the different mechanics of the game.
Yep.
Which ones do you like?
I mean, again, I think it comes back to that timing. I think I would like to keep playing this more, because for me, most of my strategy is played out in the first half. Learning, like, I feel like I've gotten we talked about spatial recognition in the first game with Boop, and I feel like I can see the board so much easier as I'm building it here versus the whole thing. And so even in whatever you do, I'm like, okay, I think she's going to do this, so I'm going to counter with this. And I feel like I've really like laid out my strategy. And a lot of times I like to race to be done first, because then I get to go first in the second phase.
Right.
And most of the time I feel like, okay, if I have laid it out the way that I want to and I get to go first, the second phase almost feels almost automatic. Like, there's still some decision to be made, but like, I almost know by the end of phase one, like, if I'm in a good spot or not.
Yeah. Phase one really is when you plan phase two, and then you're just executing the plan. You're not having to figure stuff out as you go along. You're saying
phase
two. Yeah.
But I really enjoy that timing aspect of deciding when to do what and where to place what, because you're not restricted. Like, you have 16 spaces and they don't have to touch each other or any of those other rules. Like, it just really lines itself up to where you can just be like, I want to play in the corner. I want to play in the middle. I want to play right next to what she did, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of freedom in that.
Yeah, that's good.
What about you?
I'd say my favorite component is building the grid at the start. I think that's a really fun component, that you are each drawing tiles and choosing where to lay them. And you can really set yourself up in phase two. But I mean, not to even get that deep with it, I just think it's fun that you're building your own grid and it's going to be different every single time, and you get some say-so over that.
I think
that's a cool mechanic.
No, that's awesome. And what about, I mean, again, this is one of those things, right, where the game, especially at this, like, the quickness of it and the tightness of what it is doing, like, it's hard to critique in some ways because it's not trying to do a whole lot extra. But is there anything about the game that you really just don't like?
I think so. The game's tight. Like the game flows well. You're over in 20 minutes, that kind of thing. So the two things that I don't like are more personal preferences.
Okay.
And so I think that some other people might really like that part of the game. I don't really like the postcards. I like the art on the postcards. I like the idea of the postcards. I don't like that I have to choose between taking an action on the postcards and laying my buildings. And maybe that's a flaw in me that I don't want to focus on both those things at the same time. But every single game we've played, I've been annoyed by the postcards and that they've got to take some of my attention off of building my buildings because that's what I've been focused on the whole time. So it's almost like they're a distraction or an annoyance. And I'd rather that they weren't a distraction and an annoyance and potentially more integrated into the game. And really they are, guys. This is probably just a me problem because they are. They let you trade out buildings. They let you add extra parts to buildings. They are very much integrated into the buildings themselves.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they have to steal a little bit of my focus and I have to think, oh man, is he going to get to that one first or I'm going to get that one first? And when I'm also trying to arrange my city and light it up, annoys me a little bit. So... that's
just
one.
To caveat, I don't have that feeling.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think it's just a me thing.
That was just me like adding my two cents there because I don't agree with that. I think the postcards are cool and a fun, like, and you know what the postcards are in phase one.
Yep.
So you can use that to help build your strategy for phase two.
You can use it as part of your strategy. You can. Yeah. I guess I just have this like FOMO, like in both cases. Like, man, if I don't play this building...
Yeah, that's the point.
I don't like feeling FOMO. If I don't play this building, then he's going to get that spot. But what if I don't play on that postcard that I need? Then he's going to get it.
That's so funny because that's my favorite part is figuring out that tension.
I think I'm just a little bit more anti-conflict maybe than you are potentially in board games because that's the other personal thing that I like less about this game is that... I can just watch my strategy crumble around me right in midlife, you know? And I like being able to come up with a strategy and feel good at the end of a game because, I made the plan and I did the plan and it was great. And this is a game where more than once I've just felt defeated at the end of it because my strategy didn't work out and I did get blocked and it would have been cool and it didn't work. So...
I get that.
That's a personal thing. Yeah. And that's an aspect in all these PvP games where you have the ability to block and to sabotage and this and that. And so a lot of people don't mind that. Those just aren't my favorite types of games. And this, even though you're not directly fighting, I mean, you can't like bomb each other's buildings or anything like that.
that would be crazy.
expansion ideas, anybody?
I don't think that's the point, but maybe. It was the revolution in this game.
It's the revolution. It's Paris.
Burn it to the ground!
Vive la revolution! Anyway.
Oh, no.
All right. So
anyways,
even though there's not that direct player conflict, there is a lot of ability to mess up each other's plans.
Sure.
And that's just less of my favorite style of gameplay. So
that makes sense.
Being totally honest. How about you?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is about. And maybe it's that you don't like it. Like, I'm surprised.
I do like it.
Well,
I just get frustrated by it.
Yeah. I just don't. Every time we play it, I'm like, why doesn't this see the table more?
Yeah.
You know? Because it's not like it takes up a lot of time. It's not really that hard.
No.
And so I have a hard time giving it an A because it doesn't see the table as much as it should. And I'm not always itching to bring it back out, but I don't really have a critique about it.
You can like games that I don't like. That's totally allowed.
I know that happens, but that's not the point. Like, I don't know. Like, I just don't play two player games a lot with people besides you.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't. Yeah.
But it's that question you always ask of, does this game keep you from achieving what you want in this game?
Yeah.
And my answer is yes. This game does keep me from achieving what I want because I want to go and build Paris and see my buildings light up. And too often the board's too small. You've blocked me. I end up having to cover up a lamppost just so I don't lose points by having a building up to my supply. And I don't get to accomplish what I want, which is feeling like I'm contributing to the beautiful city of Paris.
I get it.
It's just where I'm at.
Okay. Well, with that, what are you going to grade it?
Oh, I'll give it probably a C. Yeah. I was debating between a B and a C because, again, it's not a bad game. It's just not my preference because I don't feel like I get to accomplish what I want to in the game. So, again, take that and use it for your table. But my rating would be a C. When Jared says, let's play this, I say yes. I don't know that I've suggested it very often, though.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't think twice.
You have not suggested it since after the night we, when you gave it to me, we played.
Yes. And we played it a few times because I was like, maybe I'm just not understanding it because I would get that frustrated feeling of not being able to do it. And I think maybe I'm just not getting the strategy. Maybe I'm just not understanding it. So we played it several times and I was like, nope, every single time I'm getting frustrated. So yeah. How about you?
I think for what this is, I'm going to give it an A minus.
Okay.
I probably would give it just an A, but it doesn't see the table enough for me to really feel like I can just be like, yes, I always am cool to have this on the table. But I've not really had a bad experience other than you've had a bad experience. Does that make sense? Like, I've enjoyed playing the game.
Yeah, you should. You've won, like, every time.
I also, see you frustrated across the table. And I'm like, well, that's definitely not the point of a two-player game, especially. Like, I want people to always have a good time.
Yeah.
But then it's even worse when it's just you and your wife, and she's, got this frustrated look on her face. So
I'm not a sore loser, guys. That's not what he's saying. What? What?
Most of the time, that's true.
Oh my goodness. Therapy with Anna, guys.
There it is.
There it is.
Wow.
Come full circle.
Well, you too could have therapy someday. But today, thank you for listening to our episode. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we'd love to hear from you. All the links are in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chistolin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head back over to the feature table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye.